I haven't heard that song in a while. That's an old favorite, isn't it? Thank you, Jessica. Thank you, Cindy, for that wonderful accompaniment on our beautiful Baldwin grand piano over there. Thank you so much. His eye is on the sparrow. I think, my memory doesn't fail me, I think that was Jack Hiles' favorite song for some reason that came to mind. Of course, Dr. Hiles went home to be with the Lord some time ago now, some years ago, but he certainly influenced a lot of people for evangelism and winning people to Christ. If you have a Bible tonight, I invite you to join me in the book of Jeremiah. Jeremiah is in the Old Testament. He's one of those what we call major prophets. That doesn't mean that the other prophets are any less important. Major refers to the amount of material or the size of the book that was penned under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit by the prophet Jeremiah. Isaiah also is a major prophet. Ezekiel, a major prophet, as opposed to Malachi. His book is much smaller, or Micah, or Obadiah, or Nahum. Those what are called the 12 minor prophets. Now, if you're visiting with us tonight, I wish I had the time to bring you up to where we are, but we've already gone through 36 chapters of the book of Jeremiah, and time would not allow me to give you a quick review of the book. Well, maybe I could. How did you like that? Well, that was about as quick as I could do it. Now we'll move into chapter 37. I didn't say a lot, but Jeremiah lived about 600 years before Jesus Christ was born. Jeremiah prophesied specifically to the two southern tribes of Israel that were left as a result of the separation or division that came in the kingdom of Israel when the northern and southern tribes split. Two kings, two sons, Jeroboam and Rehoboam, the sons of Solomon, because of disagreements, ended up dividing the kingdom into two parts. 10 northern tribes, called Israel collectively in the scriptures in many places. The two southern tribes, Judah collectively, many places in the scriptures. The 10 northern tribes were taken into captivity about 720 years before Christ. In fact, it was Isaiah that was the major prophet during that time. 100 and some years later, Jeremiah prophesied, or he preached, to the two southern tribes and said, you know what happened to the northern tribes? They were taken off into captivity to the Assyrians. Well, the same thing is going to happen to you if you don't straighten out, if you don't get your act together. Well, we know that that's what took place. And finally, Nebuchadnezzar, who was the king of Babylon, for the third time attacked Jerusalem. And we'll see tonight, actually in chapter 39, he comes and he levels the place. That was about 586 years now before Christ, as we get into chapter number 39 of Jeremiah. When Jeremiah began to preach, he was a very young man, probably in his late teens, maybe his early 20s. As we get into chapter 37 and 38, we're at least 25 years into his ministry. He's been ministering for a long time. He hasn't got a lot of results. He's been rejected time and time again. He's done what God has called him to do, but few people have listened to what he has had to say. And now the judgment that he first spoke of all the way back in the beginning of the book is now about to take place in Judah, or the two southern tribes. So that's where we are tonight. We're coming into chapter 37. Jeremiah's prophetical ministry covered the reign of five different kings. Let me read you their names again. I've got them all written down on my first page. If you notice, and you don't need to notice this, but he was called to ministry under Josiah the king in the 11th year of Josiah. But he also served under Jehoahaz, Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, who is also called Jeconiah or Coniah in other passages. And then the last king that he prophesied under is the one that we read of here in chapter 37, Zedekiah. Zedekiah showed up back in, I believe, chapter 21 for the first time. But Zedekiah is the last king. And Zedekiah, we're going to see his fate in our study tonight. Now, For those of you that haven't been here on Sunday evenings, I'm not preaching a traditional outline. Basically, what I'm doing is reading through the chapter and try to make sense out of what is taking place. For those of you that are relatively new, you might look at this and go, I have no idea what's going on, and I see my job or my responsibility is to try to help you with what is going on. Maybe vocabulary words, a little bit of historical background, where all of this is going to go, and then put a little bit of myself or ourselves into the story. So let's go. Stay with me now. We're going to cover about 50-some verses of Scripture tonight. And King Zedekiah, he was the fifth and last king, remember, that Jeremiah prophesied under. And King Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, reigned instead of Kenaniah. He's also called Jeconiah. He's also called Jehoiachin. Just so you see all those names, sometimes it's a little bit confusing. But he reigned instead of Kenaniah, the son of Jehoiakim, whom Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, sometimes you see his name Nebuchadrezzar, sometimes it's Nebuchadnezzar, same individual, king of Babylon, made king in the land of Judah. But neither he, nor his servants, nor the people of the land did hearken unto the words of the Lord, which he spake by the prophet Jeremiah. In other words, Jeremiah was rejected time and time again over several years of ministry. And Zedekiah the king sent Jehukal, the son of Shelemiah, and Zephaniah, the son of Maaseiah, the priest, to the prophet Jeremiah, saying, pray now unto the Lord our God for us. Now, the obvious, or the judgment of God, is becoming more and more obvious to the people, and people in leadership positions who had been quite self-satisfied up to this point are becoming more and more frightened by what appears to be taking place. So these two gentlemen come to Jeremiah, and they're essentially saying, would you go to God for us and, in a sense, intercede on our behalf? Now, Jeremiah came in and went out among the people, for he had not, for they had not put him into prison. When it says that he came in and out, that just simply means he had freedom to pretty much go where he wanted to go. Then, at this particular time, with Nebuchadrezzar, or Nebuchadnezzar, threatening, Pharaoh's army was come forth out of Egypt, and when the Chaldeans, or the Babylonians, one and the same, that besieged Jerusalem, heard tidings of them, they departed from Jerusalem. So God used Pharaoh's army to kind of postpone the inevitable. The Babylonians were surrounding the city of Jerusalem. They were besieging it. They hadn't captured it at this time. And then they find out that Pharaoh's army is coming to, for what reason they didn't know, but they thought the best thing for them to do is just to get out of here. The issue wasn't with Pharaoh's army. They were attacking or coming upon Jerusalem. So they departed. Then came the word of the Lord unto the prophet Jeremiah, saying, thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, thus shall ye say to the king of Judah, that sent you unto me to inquire of me, behold, Pharaoh's army, which is come forth to help you, shall return to Egypt into their own land. Now the Israelites saw this as a reprieve. They thought, you know, Jeremiah's been saying that the Babylonians or the Chaldeans are going to come, but all of a sudden Pharaoh's army has come from Egypt to the rescue. All of a sudden these Israelites that Jeremiah has been preaching to, they're going, oh, this isn't going to take place. Pharaoh's army has come and saved us. These Chaldeans are not going to have their way with us. But Jeremiah cautions them in verse number 6. He says, behold, Pharaoh's army, which has come forth to help you, shall return to Egypt into their own land, and the Chaldeans shall come again and fight against this city, just as he said they would many times previously in this book, and take it and burn it with fire. Thus saith the Lord, deceive not yourselves, saying, the Chaldeans shall surely depart from us, for they shall not depart. For though ye had smitten the whole army of the Chaldeans that fight against you, and there remain but wounded men among them, yet should they rise up every man in his tent and burn the city with fire. So Jeremiah says, I don't care if they come with just a bunch of wounded soldiers. They're going to come to Jerusalem, and they are going to besiege it, and they are going to take the city captive. Just because Pharaoh and his army came, what seems to be a safety net or a temporary reprieve, don't trust in that, because Nebuchadnezzar will be back, the Chaldeans will be back, and just as I prophesied, the city will be destroyed. And it came to pass, verse 11, that when the army of the Chaldeans was broken up from Jerusalem for fear of Pharaoh's army, then Jeremiah went forth out of Jerusalem to go into the land of Benjamin to separate himself thence in the midst of the people. And when he was in the gate of Benjamin, a captain of the ward was there, whose name was Irijah, the son of Shelemiah, the son of Hananiah. And he took Jeremiah the prophet, saying, "Thou fallest away to the Chaldeans." Now you say, what does that mean? He's being accused of treason here. He says, you're falling away. You're taking their side, aren't you? Then said Jeremiah, "It is false." No, that's not true. "I fall not away to the Chaldeans." But he hearkened not. That is, he didn't listen to him. So Irijah took Jeremiah and brought him to the princes. Now, this isn't the king, but this is the royal family. These are the people that have the greatest influence among the people. "Wherefore the princes were wroth." That means they were angry. Wrath is an English word that is more common, from the same derivative, wroth. "The princes were wroth with Jeremiah and smote him." That is, they struck him physically and put him in prison in the house of Jonathan the scribe, for they had made that the prison. Kind of a homemade prison. It wasn't an official jail or prison, but this house lent itself to becoming a prison. So they made a few changes in Jonathan's house there, and it became Jeremiah's prison. "When Jeremiah was entered into the dungeon and into the cabins..." Now that's the only time in the King James Bible that the word cabins shows up. It's the only place. What does it mean? It's simply a reference to the rooms or the cells in a prison. "So when Jeremiah was entered into the dungeon and into the rooms or cells of the dungeon, and Jeremiah had remained there many days, then Zedekiah the king sent and took him," Jeremiah, "out. And the king asked him secretly in his house and said, 'Is there any word from the Lord? What's going on here?'" Now, Jeremiah has been very forthright up to this time. He has told him what is going to take place, what is going to happen. And now Zedekiah is trying to get an inside track with Jeremiah, like something else is up here. And Jeremiah basically responds and says, "You know, King, I've been very honest with you. I've been very transparent with you. What I have said to you publicly and to all these people is exactly what is going to take place. It's the truth. I don't have any secret message for you." So looking back at the text, it says Zedekiah the king sent, took him, and asked him secretly in his house and said, "Is there any word from the Lord?" And Jeremiah said, "There is. For," said he, "thou shalt be delivered into the hand of the king of Babylon." That's what he had been saying all along. He said, "Hey, I got a secret, King. Guess what's going to happen? You're going to Babylon. And the king is coming, and he's going to take this city. Just like I've said before. Moreover, Jeremiah said unto the king Zedekiah, 'What have I offended against thee, or against thy servants, or against this people, that ye have put me in prison?'" I'm just telling you the truth, in other words. "What do you put me in jail for? Where are now your prophets which prophesied unto you, saying, 'The king of Babylon shall not come against you, nor against the land'?" Remember earlier in the book, There were self-appointed prophets who went to the kings, the earlier kings, and said, hey, Jeremiah doesn't know what he's talking about. Everything's wonderful. Everything's great. All of the economic indicators are on their way up. Everything's great here in Judah. I don't know what Jeremiah is talking about. There were a lot of prophets that prophesied falsely. Jeremiah says, now that the Chaldeans have come, Pharaoh's army has dismissed them briefly, and then Jeremiah says they're coming back. He says, where are all the prophets? Your prophets, your self-appointed prophets, that prophesied falsely. I told you what was going to happen, and it's happening. He says in verse 20, therefore, hear now, I pray thee, O my Lord the King, let my supplication, I pray thee, be accepted before thee, that thou cause me not to return to the house of Jonathan the scribe, lest I die there. I don't want to go back to that joint, back in Jonathan's house, that makeshift prison. So he asks Zedekiah for that favor, and Zedekiah the king commanded that they should commit Jeremiah into the court of the prison, that is his own personal prison, and that they should give him daily a piece of bread out of the baker's street until all the bread in the city were spent. Thus Jeremiah remained in the court of the prison. In other words, the king put him in a better situation and made sure that he at least had something to eat. By the way, these folks are going to run out of food here very, very shortly. The Babylonians are going to come. They're going to besiege the city for about a year and a half, and they're going to run out of provisions. There's going to be a famine in the city. They're going to begin to starve, and that's when things begin to cave in militarily, and Zedekiah takes off. We'll be reading that shortly. So you follow chapter 37. You see what's taking place. The Chaldeans are about to return. This is a very temporary reprieve with Pharaoh's army coming. Zedekiah is looking for some special word like God's changed his mind. And Jeremiah says, I've been telling you the truth all along. Your prophets haven't. And what I said is going to happen is going to happen. And it will very shortly. Chapter 38 goes on and says, then Shephatiah, the son of Matan, and Gedaliah, the son of Pashur, and Jukal, the son of Shelemiah, and Pashur, the son of Malchiah, heard the words that Jeremiah had spoken unto all the people, saying, thus saith the Lord, he that remaineth in this city shall die by the sword, by the famine, and by the pestilence, but he that goeth forth to the Chaldeans shall live, for he shall have his life for a prey or a spoil or booty and shall live. Now this is what Jeremiah had said earlier. He said, God is going to judge you. The king of Babylon is going to besiege the city, and he's going to win unless you repent. Now, you haven't repented, so what I said is going to happen is surely going to happen. Now, if you want to live, give up. If you want to die, then you stay here in the city and you try to hold out against Nebuchadnezzar, and you're ultimately going to die. That's what Jeremiah is saying here in verse number 2. Thus saith the Lord, this city shall surely be given into the hand of the king of Babylon's army, which shall take it. Therefore the princes said unto the king, we beseech thee, let this man be put to death, for thus he weakeneth the hands of the men of war that remain in the city, and the hands of all the people, in speaking such words unto them. For this man seeketh not the welfare of this people, but the hurt. So what they're doing, these dignitaries, these powerful and influential people, are accusing Jeremiah of treason. He keeps telling the people, you want to live? Give up. The king of Babylon has come to take the city. He says, and what they're saying about Jeremiah is, he's weakening the hands of the men of war, meaning that he's discouraging them by telling them to give up. Now, you can see they've got a good point there. The fact is that Jeremiah is speaking on behalf of the Lord. But they want him to be put to death for treason, for weakening the people's resolve to fight against the king of Babylon. Verse 5, then Zedekiah the king said, behold, he's in your hand. In other words, kind of a, he pulls one of these pilot things, you know. You do whatever you want to do with him. I don't have anything to do with this. He's in your hand. For the king is not he that can do anything against you. What he's saying is, essentially, he says, you guys can do what you want to do. If you really want to oppose me, he says, I know you can do whatever you want, so do whatever you want with Jeremiah. Then took they Jeremiah and cast him into the dungeon of Malchiah, the son of Hamelech, that was in the court of the prison. This guy has spent a lot of time in jail. This is the third one in this chapter that he's been in. And they let down Jeremiah with cords. Now, this is a different kind of prison. This isn't Monroe County Jail. 3 squares a day. This isn't, you know, you get an hour and a half gym time. You have a computer in your cell, the 25-inch color television set. This isn't that kind of prison. They let him down into the hole in the ground with cords. They tied ropes around him and let him down in a hole, basically. It says there that, and in the dungeon there was no water but mire. You know what mire is? Mud. They let him down in a hole in the ground that was just filled with mud. And so Jeremiah sunk in the mire. Well, that's what you get for doing right. That's what you get for serving the Lord. Now, what does that do to the prosperity gospel? You know, I mean, I know that there are many general promises in the Bible that are true, that you honor God and God will honor you. 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 30 says that. But there are many people in the Scriptures that did what they were supposed to do. They honored God, and they paid a very dear price for doing that. John the Baptist honored the Lord. He went to prison, and he lost his head. Jesus Christ, more than anyone that ever lived, honored his Father in being obedient, even unto death, Philippians chapter 2 says, and he was crucified for his obedience. So there are no absolute promises, guaranteed. All you have to do is sow this seed of $1,000, usually directed to the man who's on television, and then you will be blessed incredibly because you're sowing those seeds of faith to him. You know, if these people believe that so much, I wish they'd send me $1,000. I'm going to write back the next time I see somebody on TV and ask him to send me some seeds so he can be blessed even more. Send me some of those money seeds. I wonder how many people get their $1,000 checks. Anyway, he's let down into the mire. Now when Ebed-Melech, now this is a good guy. He's an Ethiopian, one of the eunuchs, which was, that is, he was celibate. Now, a eunuch could be a eunuch made physically a eunuch, or he could render himself a eunuch in the sense that he chose not to be married, not to affiliate himself with women and do that just intentionally out of free will. What kind of eunuch he was, I don't know, but probably the second, I'm going to guess. But Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, one of the eunuchs which was in the king's house, heard that they had put Jeremiah in the dungeon. The king then sitting in the gate of Benjamin, Ebed-Melech went forth out of the king's house and spake to the king, saying, he's going to go to the king and speak on Jeremiah's behalf. He says, my lord the king, these men have done evil in all that they have done to Jeremiah the prophet, whom they have cast into the dungeon, and he is like to die for hunger. If you're from the south, you've heard that, like to die. Have you ever heard that? That's from your king. He's like to die for hunger in the place where he is, for there is no more bread in the city. Famine is in the city. They're running out of food. Nebuchadnezzar and his armies have surrounded the city. They're running out of provisions. There's no more bread in the city. Then the king commanded Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, saying, take from hence 30 men with thee, and take up Jeremiah the prophet out of the dungeon before he die. You know, I read that and I thought, man, Jeremiah must have weighed an awful lot. You know, it takes 30 guys to get him out of that hole in the ground, but That's not the case. You know, that's the reason why he sent 30 men is because they'd have to defend what they were doing. Three men could have gone. They probably would have got killed trying to get Jeremiah out of there. But 30 men go. It might have taken two or three of them to get Jeremiah out of the hole in the ground. But the other 27 were there for protection so that the people that were the proprietors of the jail wouldn't resist what they were doing. So he says, take 30 men with thee and take up Jeremiah the prophet out of the dungeon before he die. So Ebed-Melech took the men with him and went into the house of the king under the treasury and took thence old cast clouts and old rotten rags. Now there's a phrase for you, old cast clouts. You all know what that is, don't you? No, you don't. All right. Basically what that is they're old rags is what they are. Now it says rotten rags, but they're pieces of cloth that were wasted, basically. Old cast clouts. And by the way, that phrase appears in verses 11 and 12, and those are the only two times in your King James Bible that you'll read about old cast clouts. That's probably what you're not... It's not a familiar phrase, and you probably haven't spent too much time reading Jeremiah to come across that, I'm just going to guess. But old cast clouts and old rotten rags, and let them down by cords into the dungeon to Jeremiah. No, they're going to bail him out. And Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, said unto Jeremiah, put now these old cast clouts and rotten rags under thy armholes under the cords. And Jeremiah did so. So they drew up Jeremiah with the cords and took him up out of the dungeon, and Jeremiah remained in the court of the prison. But he wasn't in the same set of circumstances, a little bit easier to deal with. Then Zedekiah the king sent and took Jeremiah the prophet unto him into the third entry that is in the house of the Lord. And the king said unto Jeremiah, I will ask thee a thing. Hide nothing from me. He thinks that Jeremiah's got a different message for him. He keeps, come on now, tell me the truth. What's really going to happen? Then Jeremiah said unto Zedekiah, if I declare it unto thee, wilt thou not surely put me to death? If I tell you the truth, you're going to kill me. And that's what I've been doing all along. I've been telling you the truth. Ask me again, I'll tell you the same. I'm going to tell you the same thing I've told you over and over. So Jeremiah's kind of losing his patience with the king. If I declare it unto thee, wilt thou not surely put me to death? You're going to kill me. And if I give thee counsel, wilt thou not hearken unto me? In other words, he says, if I give you some good advice, you're just going to reject it anyway. You don't really want to know the truth, king. So Zedekiah the king swear secretly unto Jeremiah, saying, as the Lord liveth that made us this soul, I will not put thee to death, neither will I give thee into the hand of these men that seek thy life. Okay, you want to know the truth, king? Then said Jeremiah unto Zedekiah, thus saith the Lord, the God of hosts, the God of Israel. Just in case you don't know who I'm talking about. If thou wilt assuredly give up. That's what he's told him earlier in the book. He said, give up. You just give up, king. You go to the king of Babylon and you surrender and you'll live. But if you fight him, you're dead. You're history, man. If thou wilt assuredly go forth unto the king of Babylon's princes, then thy soul shall live, and this city shall not be burned with fire, and thou shalt live and thy house. All you have to do is believe me, in other words. Believe me. They're going to come and they're going to destroy this city if you don't give up, king. But if thou wilt not go forth to the king of Babylon's princes, then shall this city be given into the hand of the Chaldeans, and they shall burn it with fire, and thou shalt not escape out of their hand. And Zedekiah the king said unto Jeremiah, I'm afraid of the Jews that are fallen to the Chaldeans. Now the Jews that were fallen to the Chaldeans were Jews that were becoming more sympathetic. They were noticing that the political climate wasn't really favorable for them. So they were beginning to think about how they could go to the king of Babylon and say, you know, we've liked you all along. You're really a good guy. We've been on your side all along. We don't like Zedekiah. We don't like those people back there. We're on your team. Now what Zedekiah is thinking is he's going to fall into the hands of the people who have become more sympathetic towards the Chaldeans, and they're going to kill him, lest they deliver me into their hand and they mock me. But Jeremiah said, "They shall not deliver thee. You listen to me. Obey, I beseech thee, the voice of the Lord which I speak unto thee. So it shall be well unto thee, and thy soul shall live. You do what I tell you to do, and everything will be all right. If you don't, you're dead. You're history. But if thou refuse to go forth, this is the word that the Lord hath showed me. And behold, all the women that are left in the king of Judah's house," that's Zedekiah, "shall be brought forth to the king of Babylon's princes, and those women shall say, thy friends have set thee on and have prevailed against thee. Thy feet are sunk in the mire and they are turned away back." Essentially, what they're saying is that essentially what the custom was, when one king conquered another, part of what he got was the other king's wives. They became his wives. And that's what Jeremiah is saying. Your wives are going to be taken by the king of Babylon, and he's going to get them. Now, if Zedekiah had some marriage problems, that wouldn't sound like a bad idea, you know. But apparently, he was getting along pretty well with these women, and that didn't sound like a real good idea. That was a joke, by the way. I just kind of slipped that in. You were awful quiet out there. I just wanted to see if you were still alive, all right? Anyway, we're down in verse number 23. "So they shall bring out all thy wives and thy children to the Chaldeans." In other words, the king of Babylon, the Chaldeans, they're going to get your family. You're dead meat, Zedekiah, if you don't do what I say. "And thou shalt not escape out of their hand, but shall be taken by the hand of the king of Babylon, and thou shalt cause this city to be burned with fire. If you don't do what I say, give up. You're dead in the city. Your family is going to be taken to Babylon, and your wives, your family is going to become the king of Babylon's family, and this city is going to be leveled with fire." Then said Zedekiah unto Jeremiah, "Let no man know of these words, and thou shalt not die." It's like he's threatening Jeremiah. He says, "Now don't tell anybody what he just told me." Jeremiah doesn't care. Jeremiah was promised all the way back in chapter 1, protection by God. God said, I think it's chapter 1, verse 8, he says, "You do what I tell you to do, I'll deliver you." Now, Zedekiah is playing like, "I've got control over your life." No, Zedekiah, your history. You don't have any control at all. The only thing that you need to do, Zedekiah, is you need to do what God is telling you through me. Give up. Surrender to the Chaldeans. Surrender to the Babylonians, and you'll live, and the city won't be destroyed. If you don't, you're dying, and the city is going to be leveled with fire. "Let no man know of these words, and thou shalt not die. But if the princes hear that I have talked with thee, and they come unto thee, and say unto thee, declare unto us now what thou hast said unto the king, hide it not from us, and we will not put thee to death. Also what the king said unto thee." In other words, the king is saying, Zedekiah is saying to Jeremiah, "Don't tell those other guys that I'm talking to you, because they'll get me." Now, Zedekiah comes across is somewhat of a weakling, doesn't he? He's, every now and then he'll stand up and, "Now if you do what I say, Jeremiah, I won't kill you. But don't tell those guys over there that I've been talking to you, because they'll kill me." You know, he's not really that strong of an individual. In fact, he's trying to play both sides here. He's trying to be, in a sense, Jeremiah's friend. He's trying to get Jeremiah's sympathies so he can have what he wants and save his life. He wants the best of both worlds, and he's about to lose both. His life and his kingdom are about to go. He wants to keep his life, he wants to keep his kingdom, and he still wants to disobey God. It doesn't work out that way. Can't do that, Zedekiah. You do what I say and you'll live. You're still going to lose the city, but it won't be burned with fire, but you'll live. You'll probably still keep your family, but if you don't do what I tell you to do, you die, he's going to get your family, and the city is leveled. It's over. Then said Zedekiah, let no man know of these words. If the princes hear that I've talked with thee, verse 25, and they come unto thee and say unto thee, declare unto us what thou hast said unto the king. In other words, if they come to you, Jeremiah, and ask you what we've been talking about, don't tell them. Don't tell them what I said to you. Then shalt thou say unto them, what I want you to do is tell them this, Jeremiah. I presented my supplication before the king that he would not cause me to return to Jonathan's house to die there. So the king says, if they come to you and ask you what we've been talking about, Jeremiah, this is what I want you to tell them. I want you to say, well, the only reason I came to the king is I wanted to ask the king for permission or his safety and security so I don't have to go back to Jonathan's prison. I just want to stay right here. You tell him that that's what we talked about. Now, you know what's interesting? Jeremiah obeys him. He obeys Zedekiah. The other people show up and say, hey, what have you been talking to him about? And Jeremiah tells them what the king told him to do. He lies. Well, I'll show you. You following this? See, you can lie and get away with it. I'm trying to get a reaction. I'm looking at the kids go like that. I see a lot of the kids go, what did he say? Mama, did you hear what the pastor said on Sunday night in church? Well, hang on here. I'm going to explain myself in a moment. But this is one of those situations in the Bible where you got to really understand what's going on here. Then thou shalt say unto them, this is what Zedekiah tells Jeremiah to tell these people who will seek Zedekiah and or Jeremiah's life if they don't like what's going on, before the king that he would not cause me to return to Jonathan's house to die there. Then came all the princes unto Jeremiah and asked him, hey, what are you and Zedekiah palsy-welsy about? And he told them, according to all these words that the king had commanded. You see that? He tells them just what the king said. Now, what's the issue here? The issue is simply this. When somebody's coming to hurt you, they're unrighteous. When they're unrighteous, they're evil, and they come to you and they say, tell me the truth. You don't have to tell the truth. You don't have to tell the truth to an evil person. For example, let me make this illustration so you'll understand it. If someone comes to my house and they say, we want to kill your family. Now tell us the truth. Where are they? I go, oh, I've got to tell the truth. Well, my wife is in the bedroom in the front of the house. And my children are down hiding in the basement. I just got to tell the truth. So you'll have to go kill them now. You don't have to tell an evil, wicked person who intends to hurt you that you don't owe them the truth. Do you understand that? You can protect yourself or protect others from evil, from hurt, by not telling them the whole truth. That's what Jeremiah does. Now, don't take that beyond what I just said. Okay? We already have a tendency to commit those little white lies anyway to save our skin. That's not the situation here. These people are evil. They are wicked. They're contrary to God's word. They're going to kill the king or they're going to kill Jeremiah. They are contrary to both. They just want their way. And they ask Jeremiah, what were you two talking about? And Jeremiah says, I just told the king. I just didn't want to go back to Jonathan's prison. And there was much more to it than that. But that's all he told them. It says that he told them according to all these words that the king had commanded. So they left off speaking with him. That is, the conversation ended. For the matter was not perceived. That is, Jeremiah was successful in deceiving them. So Jeremiah abode in the court of the prison until the day that Jerusalem was taken, and he was there when Jerusalem was taken. And it's about to be taken in the next chapter and we'll be done. All right? Let's start chapter 39. You can see where we are. We got 18 verses and we're done. You following the story? Are you confused? All right, you with us? All right, let's finish this portion. This is the chapter that Jerusalem now gets destroyed. We've been kind of waiting for this, you know? Well, I don't mean it like that, but right from the beginning of the book, Jeremiah said, if you don't get right with God, this place is going up in flames, and it's about to do just that. In the 9th year of Zedekiah, king of Judah, 9th year, he ruled 11 years. In his 9th year, Zedekiah, the king of Judah, in the 10th month, came Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, and all his army against Jerusalem, and they besieged it. So it was in the 9th year of his reign, 10th month. Notice, verse 2. And in the 11th year of Zedekiah, in the 4th month, this is a year and a half later, the 9th day of the month, the city was broken up. Now, you have to understand ancient warfare. The king did, what Nebuchadnezzar did, is the city of Jerusalem was, let's assume, it was satisfactorily defended and fortified. So you just didn't walk up to the gate and say, hey, give up. We're here to take over. So what they did is the Israelites, they defended the city. They, for a year and a half, the Babylonians besieged that city, surrounded the city and ran little raids and tried to starve them out, cut them off from water supply, cut them off from provisions. And it took that time, and finally, a year and a half later, there wasn't anything left to eat in the city. Now you think about that. They had enough food for a year and a half. You have enough food in your house for a year and a half? Can you imagine how much? Of course, they didn't eat like we eat, I don't think, either. You know, we can clean a closet out in about 3 meals, you know. I imagine they would spend a lot more time cleaning a closet out, eat in those kind of conditions. You probably ate just what you had to, essentially, to stay alive, hoping that you could wait out the enemy. Well, this is what takes place. It says the city was broken up. What's happening is the defenses are beginning to crumble. The people are out of food. They're out of strength. They see that the end is near. The Babylonians, they're feeding well. They got plenty of water. They're well taken care of. They're just sitting out there waiting, starving them out. And the day comes. And all the princes of the king of Babylon came in and sat in the middle gate. Now, don't hold me to the pronunciation of all these, but we'll give them a shot. Nergal-Sharezer, Samgar-Nebo, Sar-Sekhem, Rabsaris, Nergal-Sharezer, Rabmag, with all of the residue of the princes of the king of Babylon. I practiced that all week long, and I want you to know that, to try to get through that. I don't even know how well I did. My Chaldean is a little rusty. But anyway, it came to pass, verse 4, that when Zedekiah, the king of Judah, saw them and all the men of war, then they fled. Well, Zedekiah is still in the city. I mean, this is a city. It's like Rochester. We're not talking about, you can say, oh, there they are over there. But Zedekiah finds out that the Babylonians now penetrated their fortifications. The princes, the leaders of the Babylonians are actually in the city now. We've run out of food. Our defenses are crumbling. Zedekiah finds out and he says, it's time to get out of here. I've stayed long enough. It came to pass that when Zedekiah, the king of Judah, saw them and all the men of war, then they fled and went forth out of the city by night, by the way of the king's garden. Kind of like a Saddam Hussein. You know what I mean? Isn't that something? How he got away and all that's transpired over there, and yet he's still apparently free? Well, this is what Zedekiah is thinking. He says, I got to get out of here. So he sneaks out by night, hoping he can escape. He goes by the way of the king's garden, by the gate betwixt or between the two walls, and he went out the way of the plain. But the Chaldeans' army pursued after them. They were surrounded. They caught him. They saw what he was doing, and they overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho. And when they had taken him, they brought him up to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, to Riblah. That's where the king was. The king wasn't right outside Jerusalem. He was stationed down in the little town of Riblah, waiting for Jerusalem to crumble. Well, they bring Zedekiah to Nebuchadnezzar in that town in the land of Hamath, where he, that is Nebuchadnezzar, gave judgment upon him. In other words, he said, King, you're history. You're done. And what did he do? Then the king of Babylon killed the sons of Zedekiah in Riblah right before his eyes. Everything that Jeremiah said was going to take place. Can you imagine as a father having your sons executed right before you? That's what they did to Zedekiah. They pulled Zedekiah out. They said, sit down, we want you to have a front row seat. Now bring his sons out here, kill them right in front of him. I can't imagine anything that would be much more torturous than that, other than maybe killing your daughters, having your daughters killed, raped and killed in front of you. Also, the king of Babylon slew all the nobles of Judah. Moreover, and Jeff, remember Wednesday night? Here is the passage of Scripture that you were referring to. Zedekiah was not a good guy. Moreover, he put out Zedekiah's eyes and bound him with chains to carry him to Babylon. He gouged his eyes out. The last thing he saw was his sons being executed in front of him. Then he gouged his eyes out, bound him in chains, and carried him off to Babylon as a captive. And the Chaldeans burned the king's house as a sign, we won, you lost. The houses of the people with fire and break down the walls of Jerusalem. It was Nehemiah who showed up many, many years later, around 450 years before Christ. This is 600 years before Christ. About 150 years later, that Nehemiah shows up to rebuild these walls. They're being torn down right now. Then Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried away captive into Babylon the remnant of the people that remained in the city, and those that fell away that fell to him with the rest of the people that remained. Basically, what he did is he took the resources, people-wise and whatever he could get, he took them with him off into captivity into Babylon. But he didn't take everybody or everything. Then Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, left of the poor of the people, which had nothing. They didn't have anything to offer them. They thought, we take them, we just got to feed them. So they left them there in the land of Judah and gave them vineyards and fields at the same time. They said, basically, you can have what's left here. Make a living off the gardens that are left. Now, Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, gave charge concerning Jeremiah to Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, saying, now, remember, God said to Jeremiah in chapter 1, he said, I'll deliver you. Watch what happens here. The king of Babylon, after killing the king of Judah, Zedekiah, and burning the king's house and all of this stuff, he says to the captain of the guard, he says, take him and look well to him and do him no harm, but do unto him even as he shall say unto thee. In other words, you ask Jeremiah what he wants, and whatever he says, you give it to him. You talk about good treatment by your captor, Jeremiah got it. So Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, sent, and here we go, another one of these lists of names, Nebushasban, Rabsaras, Nergal Sharazar, Ragmag, and all the king of Babylon's principals, even they sent and took Jeremiah out of the court of the prison and committed him to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, that he should carry him home so he dwelt among the people. That's what Jeremiah asked for. He said, I just want to be left alone. And Gedaliah was put in charge. Actually, Gedaliah gets put in charge of all the people that remain behind, and Jeremiah is one of them. Now the word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah while he was shut up in the court of the prison, saying, go and speak to Ebed-Melech. Remember, he's the fellow that got Jeremiah out of the mire, the pit. The Ethiopian saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will bring my words upon this city for evil and not for good, and they shall be accomplished in that day before thee. But I will deliver thee, that is the fellow that helped Jeremiah in his time of need. But I will deliver thee in that day, saith the Lord, and thou shalt not be given into the hand of the men of whom thou art afraid. For I will surely deliver thee, and thou shalt not fall by the sword, but thy life shall be a prey for a prey unto thee, a spoil. In other words, he'll preserve his life. Because thou hast put thy trust in me, saith the Lord. He acted on the Lord's behalf to save Jeremiah out of that prison. All right, now we did a lot of reading here tonight. And it's pretty much history. Did you follow that now? Did you get it? Do you have any questions about what we've read here tonight before we close? Any questions at all? It's pretty much history. If you want to get the corresponding history of this, you can go to 2 Kings chapter 25. You'll find some other facts over there that are not given here in Jeremiah about this occasion. Yes, sir? I don't have an answer to that. Why Pharaoh's army? Well, I believe the Lord orchestrated that. And it may have been just for the whole idea of saying, don't get your hopes up, folks. The Pharaoh's here, but he's not going to be here very long. Even if the Babylonian king comes with a bunch of wounded men, they're going to have their way with you. I think maybe that Pharaoh, strictly speaking from a military or political point of view, not from God's point of view, probably Pharaoh had it in for the Babylonians. They weren't neighborly, they weren't friendly. And when Pharaoh heard that the Babylonians had set their sights on Jerusalem, maybe there was something politically or personally in it for Pharaoh's army, and they came to defend Jerusalem. Not that they were friends, but maybe they could gain something through that friendship and oppose the Babylonians. So it was probably a political move on Pharaoh's part. But they didn't stay. They left. They didn't have the resources to hang around very long. The Babylonians came back and did just as what God said. That would be my guess. Okay? Somebody else? Yes, Mike? Instead of what?
Well, the other, you know, you can lie to evil people. And I understand that, because that seemed to be what Rahab did. And preserved her life.
Both could fit. Both could fit. But I thought I know somebody's going to ask me about the lie there. So I figure I might as well explain it before somebody asks me. And I believe that to be true, and with the example that I gave. But yeah, he could be just obeying the king's command. But if he was lying. Anyway, you look at it, he didn't tell the truth, you know. So he didn't tell the whole truth. In no way am I justifying lying to someone who deserves to hear the truth. In no way. But if some evil person tries to take advantage of you or tries to hurt you, say some guy asks you on the street, little kid, I want to know, where do you live? Oh, I got to tell him the truth. I live at 40 Overlook Trail. Now he's probably going to stalk me, you know. Or, hey, little kid, you got a cute little sister. Where do you live? I ain't telling him. I live over there. I live in Gates. In other words, if I perceive that someone was working evil against my family, I don't have a problem protecting my family. Rick? That's true. To a point. It's true. He didn't tell them the whole truth. Is that what you're saying? That's the difference between lying and not telling the whole truth? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree. But then if he threatens you and says, if you don't tell me where you live, I will kill you. I live in Gates. Okay, little kid, you can go. Yeah, that. But you're right. I agree. You don't have to tell him. You don't have to tell him. But if you get threatened, yes, the lying exceptions in the Bible, yes. Ken? Yes. 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 And someone else brought up Rahab. She didn't tell the whole truth. Pete? Well, I see life and death in the Hebrew midwives. I see it in this situation. In all the situations in Rahab, I see that in all those situations that is a life and death situation. So that's a good point. It's a good point. Can anybody think of a place where someone didn't tell the truth? There's another place in the Scriptures. Where?
Abraham and Sarah.
Yeah, but that was wrong. Well, no. That's a different situation. Yeah, he was trying to cover himself there. He had already got himself in a bad situation, and now he's trying to cover up his bad situation with a half-truth. He did tell half the truth. She's my sister, because she was his half-sister. He did tell half the truth. Yes, sir. Ralph?
Jacob,
in which situation? Lying to his father? Well, that wasn't a good thing. I wouldn't just... Oh, yeah, well, I wouldn't justify that. No. No, okay. I'm looking for places where it might be justifiable. Yes, and that isn't one. No, I would agree. All right, before we teach our kids to lie here tonight, one more comment. Yes, sir. Yeah, he did lie to his father, didn't Saul? Yes, he did. To protect a life. Again, like Pete said, it's a life and death situation, and there was a protection there in telling a mistruth. I don't like that word lie. That's a powerful word. But you're right. That's another situation. So there's several of them in the Scriptures like that. Yes? You're talking or commenting or asking a question. It's what? Mm-hmm. Okay, you put your cards on the table and I'll play mine. Okay. I'm not sure what you're saying. Are you asking something from me? What are you asking? He is lying to, because he knows the heart of his father, I believe. I think that Jonathan was doing the right thing to protect his friend, knowing that his father, knowing that David was anointed to be king, knowing that his father was jealous, Jonathan was protecting his friend from the evil of his father, from his father's jealousy and whatnot. So again, what Pete said, I think it's a matter of life and death. I think that it was justifiable there. But those are a handful of exceptions in the Scriptures? There's not many of them, and they're all pretty serious situations. It's not over a piece of candy or where did you go this afternoon. These are life and death situations in every case. So, pretty serious. But that is it. All of them are, you know, we are so, and rightly so, we are so strong morally to say, tell the truth. Always tell the truth. We don't want to talk about exceptions to that that are very rare and very few and far between in the Scriptures. Certainly, we don't want to give that ammunition to a child who doesn't understand what we're talking about right now. Say, well, I heard what they said. They said it's okay to lie. No, it's not okay to lie. It's wrong to lie. But in a matter of life and death, I think this is the conclusion that we're coming to, if somebody evil is going to harm somebody and you're in a place of either telling the truth or distracting them, it's okay to distract or divert them. I think it's safe to say. In that exception, rare exception. Okay? Can we all agree with that? All right. Good. Then, well, I heard two voices out there. Thank you for your encouragement. All right. Well, let's stand together. Read your Bible this week. Spend some time in God's Word. Every day. Oh, hold it. Thank you, Andrew. We got to sit down. We got a video. I'm sorry. This is part of the program and we'll go home. Let me pray right now. When the video's over, then you'll be dismissed. All right, Lord, we're thankful.